We, however, on the day, as the apostles commanded us in the Didache, that's what it says. As to circumcision, we do not circumcise in the way of the Jews, for we know the teachings of the fount of wisdom, Paul. This is taken from. As to eating pork, so Levitical food regulations are another big feature of Ethiopian Christian life. Pork is not eaten here, however, we do not refrain from eating it in keeping with the Judaistic law. We do not abhor those who eat it, and we do not force the one who does not eat it to eat it. So, in a sense, if you look at a sort of broader reading of the New Testament, some of their attitudes really are drawn on an understanding of the Bible. We don't eat pork, but we don't judge people because they eat it. We're happy with that. We circumcise, but we don't circumcise for salvation. So the argument is we do it because we've always done it. And this, if you like, is based on a perception, whether true or not, of the ancient Jewish heritage of Ethiopia. Now, what's interesting is that largely, so I'm, if you like, coming back in time now, this idea, this failure to really try to understand perpetuates. So Protestant mission organisations, on the whole, make no attempt. Yes? So what you get building up is a set of, let's call them legends or myths or something. People believe them, but they have no detailed foundation about Orthodox Christianity on the part of Protestants, with a few exceptions. And I was talking to people earlier. Roger Cowley and some other people from Crosslinks are quite the exception. Roger Cowley was sent to teach the Bible to the Orthodox, and he decided that he ought to first of all learn how the Orthodox use the scriptures and interpret them. And what he ended up with is the most remarkable piece of scholarship on Ethiopian biblical interpretation, which hasn't really been matched. If you've got the slightest interest in this sort of thing, as I say, these, you go over to the library at Middle Eastern Studies. These are going for £2 each because they want to get rid of them. This is the commentary on the Book of Revelation, Ethiopian style. Roger ended up with a Doctor of a DD from Cambridge for this work, and this is much harder to find. I'm trying to persuade Cambridge University Press to at least issue it as a digital document, and they've agreed in principle, but they actually haven't done anything about it. But
are they in our library?
I don't know, because if that one's not, £2 probably you can run to, yes?
I think we can, yeah.
This one, I don't think you can get copies of, but now, so. Along with Roger Cowley, other figures I can name, some of you, if you've got an interest in Ethiopia, may have met or come across some of them. Colin, you know.
I know them very well indeed. Yeah.
Yes. Colin, there's a textbook used at Holy Trinity College, where I used to teach, which is a systematic theology divided into the doctrine of the Father, the doctrine of the Son, and the doctrine of the Holy Spirit. And it's written in Amharic by Colin Mansell, who's an Anglican. And it's a good text. You've seen that, haven't you?
And he's done the Bible dictionary.
He's done it, but he did lots of things. Died shortly after completing his systematic theology.
But Hazel is still there.
Hazel is still there, yes. Colin was remarkable. When I moved to the north of Ethiopia with my wife, I asked him what... I said, well, we'd really like to understand Orthodox Christianity better. What should we do? And Colin said, he comes from a long tradition of slightly, let's say, middle or upper middle class Anglicans. Yeah? So it's, Ralph, your first priority is to learn Amharic. And your second priority is to learn Amharic. And your third priority is to learn Amharic. So I got the message, yes. But largely, when we speak to the Anglicans, when we speak to the Ala Hayward, both missionaries and the people in the church, they have these standard critiques of Orthodox Christianity. Oh, they've got 81 books in their Bible. They don't know what Scripture is. Yes? They don't read their Bibles anyway. They worship Mary, they worship the saints, and all sorts of standard critiques of orthodoxy. Now, some of these things, it may be true that some Orthodox Christians worship Mary, but it's not the teaching of the church, okay? It's an error that the church would seek to put right, okay? A lady who taught me New Testament Greek passed on some wisdom from her seminary professor. She said that her seminary professor said, when you encounter a different Christian tradition, what you should do is judge it from the best of its theology, not the worst of its laity. And very much you can see that the worst of the laity are the model. Now, of course, as Protestant Christianity grows, it has encountered orthodoxy, and some people have converted. But of course, then this builds up the negative image. So the more detailed knowledge of Orthodox Christianity is built on people who have left the church for whatever reason. And they may have had very good reasons, don't misunderstand me.
Have there been conversions in both directions?
Yeah, there have been some conversions. So I think it's probably larger from Orthodoxy to... Yeah? Okay. Having said that, in my early encounters with Orthodox Christians, I would say, as I've already said, that the critique that the Orthodox have of Protestants is also... It wouldn't pass O-level religious studies, let's put it like that. I remember an early encounter with a young student who was a very, very, very devout Orthodox Christian up in the north of Ethiopia. And I asked him, I said, well, so can you tell me something about Orthodox Christian belief? And he said, right. He said, it listed 10 things that I knew were nothing to do with Orthodox Christianity. And he said, the Protestants believe those and we don't. Okay? And they were, I can't remember the whole list, but a very negative us and them sort of attitude. So, what happens as a result of the end of the Civil War and the fall of communism is a proclamation of religious equality and freedom, which has never really been the case in Ethiopia. People have been allowed to practice religion. But what it means is, as well as there being peace in the north of Ethiopia, yes, the land of the north of Ethiopia becomes legitimate territory, if you like, for evangelical Protestant mission. And that would be defended in for all sorts of reasons, but the strongest justification that I've heard was that the Orthodox are apostate. They don't follow true Christianity, and we have to take true Christianity to them. So we've got this proclamation. So after 1991, there is a rush of both national and expatriate missionaries to the north of Ethiopia. And what this produces is, in many cases, clashes of all sorts, in some cases very violent. Some people were killed, and it's connected with, I'm not saying that Christians killed each other. What I'm saying is, in the conflict, it provided opportunities for people to do things like that. So there was a Protestant pastor killed in Marawi when I was living in Bahadar. And it was a group of people who were Orthodox that probably killed him. I'm not at all trying to say that the church said that they should or anything like that. But these things happen when tensions arise. And there are lots of, as I say, what we have is this clash happening with no mutual understanding. Either side's critique of the other is based on so little knowledge that it serves no function whatsoever, I think. And this is the situation that propagated from about 1991 right into the early 2000s. And several things happened, and that's, if you like, the state that I wanted to paint the picture of. two Christian communities, very devout, with all sorts of different histories. So, of course, by the time we're now talking, the Protestant church has been established for decades. So the leaders of the church, who are Protestant, don't remember a time when there weren't Protestant churches. Yes, they're firmly embedded. I think there was a time, perhaps in the late 80s and early 90s, where the Orthodox sort of thought that it's a bit like the early Christians writing about the rise of Islam, that it was some sort of an aberration in history. And you see these writers sort of assuming that the Arabs are going to go away at some point. And this is the view that the Orthodox have. But by the early 2000s, it's becoming pretty clear that the Protestant church is here to stay. And in its largest expression, the Galahiwa church, which is quite aggressively, not physically aggressive, but it's very much an evangelical church. It wants to see people converted. But I think Ethiopian society as a whole wasn't so happy with this situation. Ethiopian society, as I've seen it in so many ways, is one that seeks harmony. The end of the civil war in Ethiopia was not a bloodbath like you imagine those wars that ended in places like Mogadishu and Monrovia. Yeah, and it's because of a witness, if you like, to 1700 years of the influence of Christian religion that people sought to make amends, to treat people kindly who'd fought for the government and all sorts of things. I could go into many more details there. But the country isn't happy with it. So a couple of things happened more recently that are really interesting. So in 2010, the Interreligious Council of Ethiopia is established. And this is a state organisation. Now, my initial view of this was, oh, it's just some government office that's going to achieve nothing. But I've actually spoken to people from various different religious groups who've been involved with it. And they've seen the action of this group as very, very much influential on promoting not full acceptance, but promoting communication and harmony between religious groups. So on the Interreligious Council, there are leaders from various Protestant churches, including Lutherans and others. Galahiwa are there. The Orthodox Church has its representatives, as do Muslims and other things. Another feature of the religious freedom post-1991 is public Islam. There were lots of Muslims in Ethiopia for a very long time, but you would never know who they were unless you spotted them going to mosque. But Muslims get a new confidence. They're official now, so people start wearing more specifically Islamic dress. You begin to see people praying their Muslim prayers publicly. I've seen it done in hotels, in gardens and things. You would never have seen that in earlier times. So this is established. And it actually forces people to sit down around the table and start really thinking about what's going on. Meanwhile, in most cases still, the critiques of one another are not improving. I spent 6 years working at the Orthodox Seminary in Addis, and I'm not going to say who wrote this because you would probably know who they were, but a final year essay was submitted, which was supposed to be a patristic critique of Protestant theology, and most of the essay was about how all Protestant missionaries work for the CIA and all sorts of complicated stories. I was actually asked by a student at the college if I worked for the CIA. And I said, my response to them was, if I did, do you think I would tell you? And her response was, well, if you were open, then you would. And I said, well, I think working for the CIA means I'm not, doesn't it? Anyway.
All over Africa.
Yeah, it's all over Africa. Lost my thread for a brief moment there. So we've got this deep-rooted still impressions, let's say. But also what's happening, by was the survey? Was around, was it 2007 was the controversial national census, which shows that with 39% of the population Orthodox Christian, 18.4% are Protestants. Yes? And a decade before, that would have been down at maybe 5, 6%. So huge growth. So what's happening as a result of that is that in the workplace, people are encountering each other. I can remember a friend of mine who, I'm going to run out of time shortly, aren't I? So I'm nearly there.
Go on.
An old student of mine, devout Orthodox, loathed Protestants. The language he used, you know, it was almost unbearable. And round about 2012, 2013, he came to me and he said, "Ralph," he said, "I have to share my office with a Protestant." And I was thinking, oh no, he's going to go off on one of his, and he said, "And you know what? He's quite like Jesus Christ." So, encounters where people just have to get on because they're working together started to show people that there was more to it, okay, if you like. What I think is also very significant going on at this time, and it's a shame that Sophonie didn't make it. Sophonie, who is giving the next seminar, and Meron, the one after, are both prospective faculty at the Ethiopian Graduate School of Theology, which was established in the early 2000s. And there's some visionary leadership, if you like, from that group of people. So there's a gentleman by the name of Desta Haliso, who is a leader in the Alahiwa Church, very good scholar. And Desta decides to do his master's dissertation on the Book of Enoch. And this is a big statement for a Protestant to read the Book of Enoch, even, let alone study it. So the Orthodox have Enoch mostly in the Bible. And the Protestants therefore see, you know, this is part of the apostate nature of Orthodoxy that they have this. And what we get at the Ethiopian Graduate School of Theology is a growing group of scholars who take Orthodox Christianity seriously. And this is a change that's happening at this moment. So the next two presenters of these seminars are doing their doctorates now. Sophonie looks at the Book of Enoch, and Meron, who will be giving the last seminar, she's looking at the Ethiopian monastic texts, many of which are from the Syriac tradition, Isaac of Nineveh and so on. So as leaders and trainers of leaders, they're starting to take these texts seriously, starting to find ways not only of understanding them, but of actually realizing that these texts are instructive, helpful, whatever. I remember an early conversation I had with Meron when she started reading the commentary, which she, when I'd first met her, she'd not known that there was any Bible commentary in the Orthodox Church. She starts reading the printed editions in Ethiopia, and her initial comment is, "This is like listening to my grandmother talk about God." And that was a very fond memory, yes? She had a high respect and reverence for her grandmother. But the language, the style, and the approach. So what we've got is a growing body of evangelical leaders who are serious about the Orthodox Church, and in a sense who can perhaps shock a little bit Orthodox Christians who think that the Protestants don't know anything about. And I think to a certain extent as well, we have a growing group of Orthodox Christians who are beginning to see, at least, that Protestant Christians actually live quite good lives. When they look at some of the problems of Ethiopia and the corruption and different things, they're opposed to it. And so they're learning that actually there's a bit of potential for working together. I want to mention one last thing, which is something that I'm involved with. I'm going to give you a photograph rather than some text. What's happening in Ethiopia is mirrored a little bit, if you like, worldwide through an organisation called the Lausanne Orthodox Initiative, which is a body set up by the Lausanne movement that promotes not theological dialogue, but joint mission between Orthodox and Evangelicals. And it's led by this lady, Grace Matthews, was on the board of Lausanne. And some of you may know this character here. He's Bishop Angelos, the Coptic bishop. He was the General Bishop of the United Kingdom. He's recently been ordained as Bishop of the newly created Diocese of London. These two figures lead. Bishop Angelos attended the last Lausanne World Congress in Cape Town, and he was invited as an observer, and he really liked it. He said he liked being around people who took the scriptures seriously, who were committed to their faith, all sorts of different things. But he describes having to sit and listen to one of the keynote speakers at the Lausanne Congress describe the Copts as an unreached people. And Bishop Angelos is a gracious man, so rather than storming out, he went to a group of people and said, I think there's something we need to talk about. So this group, actually this is at Selwyn College here, we met last September in Selwyn College for a consultation on theological education. But what we're seeing, there's quite a large Ethiopian involvement in this group, encouraged particularly by the Indians. This gentleman here, Dimitrios, is the Indian Orthodox Metropolitan Bishop of Delhi. And the Indians, of course, have always had to be in dialogue with other faiths, let alone other sorts of Christians. And so they don't regard it as problematic, so they're great at bringing people to the table. But what we're seeing is a place where people can get together and begin to learn to respect each other's traditions. This is mirrored in Ethiopia. There's a couple, I can't see them. There's two Russians here, Sergei and Vasily. Sergei is the dean of the Evangelical Seminary in St. Petersburg, and Vasily runs or teaches at the Orthodox Seminary. But Vasily teaches at the Evangelical Seminary, he teaches Russian church history. And Sergei teaches at the Orthodox Seminary, and he teaches Reformation history. Yes?
Where are the seminaries? Which seminary
is it? I don't know the names off the top of my head. They're both in St. Petersburg, yes. So what we have is, again, at the level of theological training, we have a new generation of leaders who are not learning the old mantras about what they are like, but are learning from devout people about their own tradition. And as I say, this is we actually had a Lausanne meeting in Addis Ababa the year before last, which was trying to get people to work together in this way. So what I'm hoping we're beginning to see is a new generation, not one that says Orthodox and Protestant are the same, but one that understands where they differ and where they don't, and one that sees that there are maybe some other more important things to worry about than the infighting that has been, or the internecine fighting that's been going on in the country. I could say an awful lot more, but I probably ought to stop and let you ask some questions.